Welcome to the Shakeout Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Van Buskirk. Each week, Canadian running staff writer Maddie Kelly and I bring you the news, results, and drama from the exciting world of running. This is The Rundown. Well, listeners, today we are joined on The Rundown by Lucia Stafford and Andrea Sakafian, both of whom recently joined the Bowerman Track Club in Portland, Oregon. Both Andrea and Lou competed in the Olympics this summer. Lou was a semi-finalist in the 1500 meter, and Andrea was a finalist in the 5000 meter and 10,000 meter. Both ran big personal bests in multiple events this year, and they're bringing that success with them to Portland. Lou and Andrea, it is so nice to see you. And also Maddie, hello to my co-host. How's everyone doing?
Good. Thanks for having us. Yeah, thanks for having us, Kate. Happy to be back on the show.
We didn't include this on the pod because the news hadn't been broken yet, but I didn't yell it at Shalane, but I kind of blurted out. I was like, you stole my training partner. And Kate was like, you stole my training partner too. And Shalane was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And we were like, no, it's okay. It's the right thing for them. But it was just funny to be talking to her and be like, you took our friends away.
And we're very happy for you and for Shalane and Bowerman that they get to enjoy your company and your presence. But yes, we do miss you very much. So right off the bat, you two are in separate rooms of the same house because you're living together, right? Can you tell us a bit about your living arrangements and where you're at?
Yeah, so we moved. I got here at the end of October. Lou came a few days later, and we were just living in an Airbnb and looking for a house and a car. And it was like pretty chaotic just moving to a new country for me again. Lou, first time leaving Toronto. And it was additionally chaotic because we like came with nothing. So, our apartment currently is just like a series of boxes of like new furniture. It just kind of made sense to live together. Mostly because we're like not really here ever. We're like at, altitude a lot. So just to like save on costs and things, we, decided to live together, and we're also living downtown Portland, which is really cute and fun. We live in like the Nob Hill area, which is really nice. So yeah, we just found something that just like suited our lives. A lot of people live in Beaverton, but we decided to go downtown.
That's awesome. So you've been there since October, Andrea. And sorry, Lou, when did you move down to Portland?
I moved down on November 1st. I had to make sure I found an apartment that was within walking distance to Salt and Straw. So the ice cream shop.
Okay. So that's like a iconic Portland ice cream place.
Yeah. I've already been there. I have to go at least once a week, I think. Maddie knows it well.
I do. Because Lou and I were in Portland for about 5 weeks last spring. So we got to know the area and the spots. And Portland, if I was ever to move to America, it's like the Portland downtown is just lovely. It's about as lovely as you get. So they're in a cool spot.
Andrea, do you have any favorite spots, coffee shops, ice cream places, anything that you've really enjoyed so far?
The coffee scene is actually like really good here. There are some like cute little places near us. There's also a place that it's called Auntie Pegs. It was started in Melbourne and then brought to Portland. So it's kind of cool. They like roast. It's like a coffee roastery. So yeah, I've been having their beans and it's just like so nice.
I was going to say it's really high praise when Andrea tells you that she's found a good coffee spot outside of Australia, because I know that you are, and I say this with love, but you're a huge coffee snob, and rightfully so, because you've just had such good coffee experiences in Melbourne. So it makes perfect sense to me that you found a Melbourne founded coffee shop in Portland, and I'm glad you're enjoying that.
Yeah, I'm kind of like the opposite of Andrea in terms of coffee drinking. So she gets a little disgusted when I pull out my Folgers instant coffee and I pour it with hot water and then I dump a bunch of milk and sugar in it. I think she wants to go back to Australia when she sees that.
I mean, I was on the receiving end of that a few times in Flagstaff with like what I thought were pretty high quality beans, and I was still looked down on a little bit. So I'm sorry, Lou, but I can see why the Folgers just does not make the cut.
I think I was actually the person who gave Lou her first cup of coffee. We were doing a double race at U of T, and she was tired after the 600, and we were running a 1500 later that day, and we went across the street to Second Cup, and I think I got her, like, I don't know, like a mocha choco latte. You like chocolate, you'll like this. So I feel like I'm partly to blame for, like, coffee plus sugar equals match made in heaven.
I've upgraded to the odd cappuccino, but sometimes it's just not sweet enough.
Fair enough. Well, I know that this was a big move for both of you. And again, Maddie and I sort of knew the behind the scenes of this, the fact that you were both planning to make this move to Bowerman and to Portland before it was official. And we have lots of audience questions for you both today. But maybe we could start just by getting a little bit of an update from you both. And I'm especially curious, and I think our audience is too, about Andrea, because my friend, you have been through it this year, and I know that you were with the Melbourne Track Club for the last 4 years, your partner, and you have been living in Australia. Anyone who listens to the show will be familiar with this story. But Andrea, maybe you could give us a bit of a snapshot of what the last couple months have been like with this whole ordeal, not being able to get back into Australia.
Yeah, so when I left Australia, the border was closed to anyone who is not a citizen or not a permanent resident, neither of which I am. And I lived there on a temporary visa, like a skilled labor visa from Jamie's work. But I have a visa to live there. So I applied to leave, but it didn't really mean anything. And I knew that it would be hard for me to get back into the country. But it was also like I was like backed against a wall because it's the Olympics and I had to, well, go and like qualify in races before that were like obviously not having in Australia. So I obviously left like knowing the situation. And then when my season ended in August, I applied to return and I was just denied. We've applied like 6 or 7 times and just every single time we get denied. So basically I've been like just roaming around the world for like, it'll be 8 months in December. So I like went from Teddington where I was racing to Germany where my brother lives. He like works for Shopify in Germany and just like happens to live in Europe. So that was like actually really great. I stayed there for a month, just sort of like trying to figure out like if I could go back to Australia or, and also figuring out like this whole Bowerman piece, just like talking to Nike and Jerry. And so that was like a good little base. And then once I found out that I would be joining Bowerman, I went to Vancouver to see Mary Lou. And then to Victoria, while it was still like, we were trying to figure out the visa for America. So yeah, I was there for 3 weeks and then I came to Portland. So this whole time I've had like nothing with me. I like packed 8 months ago and have just been like, yeah, just moving from place to place. However, they actually, well, they were going to open the border December 1st, but with the new variant, they moved it to December 15th. But I will be going home shortly once I booked a flight for December 10th, but we have to move it. So yeah, I will be finally be going home in a week.
That is so exciting. Congratulations. I know it's been such a hard journey for you and Jamie. That is such amazing news. Yeah, that's really, really cool, Andrea. That must feel really good.
And just in time for Christmas.
Yeah, just in time for Christmas. I was hoping that they would. I think it would just be like sick and cruel if they didn't open the border too. So it's just for like people who have visas are now allowed to go in, not like tourists. Mm-hmm. So like international students can return. And yeah, so thankfully that happened. Yeah, so finally get to go home.
That's going to be tough, I would imagine. Like, how long are you going home for?
Yeah, it was supposed to be 3 weeks, but then with like the move, it'll be like 3.5 because we're going to altitude in January. And Jamie is also like doing an altitude study. So yeah, we're just both going to altitude in January.
But in different places.
In totally different places. So yeah, it'll be like 3 weeks.
Man.
That's wild. Well, I'm glad you're going to have that time together. I can imagine it'll be hard to leave at the end of that 3 weeks. I don't want you to be thinking too much about that now, but that's great. You're going to be able to see him again. Lou, so different sort of situation with a close person in your life. What's it like being back reunited with your sister, Gabriella?
Oh, it's so nice. We actually, so we go to her house quite often for dinner and they cook us some a meal last night. That we decorated their Christmas tree. It was Rowan's birthday on Saturday. So Gabriella made carrot cake, which I didn't think I would like, but apparently if you put enough sugar in it, I'll like anything. and yeah, it's just been so nice. Basically, we, you know, like grew up together and then both went to U of T and were training partners. And then in my second year, she moved to Glasgow, and ever since then, we've only really seen each other for little snippets at a time for the past however long, 3 years, 4 years. And it's always been in more stressful circumstances, like at a race, or she came back during COVID, but that was like peak COVID when there was 9 people living in our house, and they had just moved from Glasgow and were trying to move to Portland. So it was like super stressful. So I just feel like it's been a long time since I've gone to spend time with her and like day to day and like train with her. And it was almost like we were still very, very close, but I kind of like forgot a little bit like what it was like to spend that much time with her. And yeah. And so it's been so nice. I feel like just, you know, dusting the dust off our relationship and getting to be training partners, and more than anything, just, you know, see each other so much and spending quality time together has been really nice.
Guys, I want to back it up just a little bit because obviously you're both here now and there are certainly some, you know, some circumstantial things that led you here. So what, walk us through both of you, like your decision-making process, like why Bowerman and why now?
I think that we're like seeing in women's distance running, like the quality of runners is just getting so much better. And not only like at the top, but like the depth of it. And it was quite a shock and a disappointment to scrape into the 5K final on a disqualification and then come last. Like that just didn't sit well with me. I don't like leave Australia for 8 months to come last in an Olympic final. So I just felt like I need to be able to run like 14:40 or better and 30:30 and better to like really be competitive. And the women on this team have done that, or I think are capable of that. And it's just easier to like improve and close the gap when you're running with people who have done the things that you're doing. So I just felt like I needed to be in like a better program with better people to get out of like the teens. Like I've been 13th, 14th, 15th. And I just, yeah, I didn't see a situation in which I like came top 8 just like miraculously in MTC. I think I had like exhausted what I was going to do in that program. And I just needed to like level up to like the standard of what distance running is on like the global stage right now. And I also think that Jerry is just really, he's just such a smart coach. Like he plans, he's like very meticulous, and I am also very meticulous. And I like when he's just like thinking about things. I think we saw that with like that 10K that they ran in February last year, where they had everything like perfectly lined up. They ran it after being at altitude. They had the pacers. It was like in California. And they probably had that like totally controlled. And I like watched that feeling kind of like a fool, because then I had to like sort out some sort of other 10K situation. So just like things like that, I think Jerry does really well. And like, yes, his athletes are really talented and they work really hard, but I think that he is like outwitting people and like outsmarting people. And that's how they do like exceptionally well. So I kind of just wanted to be in like a more like structured professional group where they have like a plan for the year. And they also just have like really good resources. They have a physio, they have Shalane and Jerry and a strength coach. Like, it's just like such a good setup. And finally, I am planning to run a marathon in October. Like the plans are loose, but like, yeah, after the track season, I would like transition to running a marathon. And I couldn't really think of a better situation than having Shalane, like one of the best American marathon runners of all time, as like a coach and mentor. So that was like a dream. Like, Shalane has been like such an idol to me for so long that like, I honestly couldn't think of like a better situation than like having her be part of like my marathon career. So I'm super pumped about that.
That's really exciting, Andrea. I know you've been talking about wanting to do a marathon for a while, so it's neat to hear that you have like a loose plan for what that timeline might look like. That'll be really fun to watch unfold.
Yeah. So maybe Berlin or London, both are in October again. So yeah, stay tuned.
Awesome. Great to hear. Lucia, what about you?
Yeah, my like decision making process was a bit different. It was a pretty hard decision for me. I've definitely been a homebody. I haven't left like within like 20 minutes of my house for the past ever. So it was definitely really hard. But I think like even growing up, there was always like a part of me that kind of wanted to have this like crazy adventure and like wanted to live on the West Coast and like be in like the forest. And I did like kind of want that. And because I hadn't left Toronto my whole life, I think it was starting to itch more and more. And so last year was like an amazing year and it was so special and I loved the setup and I could have seen myself staying and continuing. But I think after graduating and having such a successful year, I think it was just, the timing made sense. And I graduated university. I was going to have to change a lot of things. And so I kind of thought, why not now have this adventure that I've like always wanted to have and go out west. And it's, you know, it makes a lot of sense too. I'm with my sister, my big sister, who's the top, you know, one of the top 1500 meter runners in the world. So it's like, I'm not going to not run well, like by joining this group. So yeah, I think it honestly came with like a lot of bonuses and I'm really excited. I'm learning a lot. I think, you know, even when I made this choice, it was definitely, I knew be a shift and be more focused, but I think, you know, I'm constantly learning and restructuring my life a little bit, but yeah, I'm excited. I get to go for lots of walks and run with really fast people, but definitely miss at home. It was a hard decision because it was two really good options. But I kind of was like, if I don't leave Toronto now, I don't think I'm ever going to leave. So, which is not a bad thing, but I did want to have an experience and an adventure. And I think if I stayed maybe later in life, I would have regretted it. So.
Okay, guys, question for both of you. You show up to like practice number one. What is like leaving? What was your most overwhelming first impression?
My first session was, it's like a structured long run. So it's just like a progression run basically. And it was just sort of what I said before, like the women and like the men go separately, obviously, but we have like Shalane biking with us, and they had Jerry biking with them. And so it was just sort of like the organization that like there were coaches there for the long run. Like Shalane is on the bike. If you had like a drink or gels or whatever, she's like carrying them for you. And she's like chatting and whatever, but also like coaching, just saying like, oh, like you have a long way to go. Don't go out too hard. You can ruin a run in the first hour. And just like, I don't know. It was just so amazing to me to like have a coach on a bike and like both groups having that and just like that guidance through this like 2 hour long run. And so, yeah, I left feeling like, wow, this is just like, I just feel like I'm going to be such a better athlete because the coaches are like really involved and yeah, they're actually like coaching you during the run. Similarly with like the tempos, like Jerry, Shalane, the physio and the strength coach will like be on bikes. I'm like, that's so cool. Like you just have so many people, like it is really just like everyone's involved and they're like seeing what's happening. So there's just like more information for them to like work with. So yeah, that's sort of just like what I thought was like, how cool, like all these resources are so cool.
My first practice was the one after that, and we did hills and then some stuff on the track, and it was kind of funny because I was like, oh, this is so familiar, you know. On Tuesday we do like a longer warm-up, so by the end of the day I was like, that was a lot of running, which was definitely shocking for me. But I also think I was like, this is so familiar, and it just felt kind of comforting to be like, well, it's just running, you know. Yeah, other than that, the increase in amount of running has been an adjustment for me. But the other day, I'm like, wow, this running is running. Like, they do hills and 300s here, too.
So that actually leads really well into one of our audience questions, which was, how much do you expect that training will change by moving to the Bowerman Track Club? And obviously, like Andrea, you're more of a longer distance runner. Lucia, you're still really focused on the mid-distance event. So I know that, you know, each of your training probably looks different from each other, but maybe an understanding that you've just started with this group, if there's like one or two kind of like main differences that you've noticed so far or that you anticipate in terms of what training's looked like in the past versus what it will look like moving forward with this group.
Yeah, in the fall, Lou and I have actually, well, everyone does the same thing. But like compared to MTC, it's actually quite similar. Like the philosophy is the same, but these sessions are like much, much longer, like twice as long. So I think going forward, it will probably, yeah, like still be similar, but just be much longer. So it really hasn't been like that much of an adjustment for me, other than Jerry does actually more speed than Nick, which is possibly surprising. So we'll be doing like fast things right now, which I think is really good because then you never really get that far away from like that race pace feeling. So yeah, mostly just like, instead of doing a 10 kilometer tempo, we do like 10 miles. So it's like quite an increase in just like intensity.
Yeah, for me, the biggest change has definitely been, you know, focus on strength. But I was already like in the fall pretty focused on strength. And I think it's just kind of like the next step. It's actually kind of nice because I haven't had to increase my easy running at all. And I haven't had to, I still get a day off a week. And just by that alone, like, the workouts are so long that I'm like increased my mileage like 30 kilometers a week or something, just from like workouts because they're so long. And I really like that though, because I love having my day off. I'm the only one on the team who gets one because I'm the shortest amount of mileage. Like Andrea and I are living together and it's like I'm the shortest and yeah, like shortest distance and youngest, and then with the longest distance runner. So it's pretty funny, but yeah. So I think for me too, the other big change is, yeah, the amount of structure. Being in school beforehand, it was really hard to have that kind of structure with my training. It was always just Well, I guess I'll go for my run now at like 6 p.m.
Well, Lou, when it comes to like the structure of your workouts too, I feel like just via your sister. I mean, you and I both inherited a lot of tips from your sister, but there was a little crossover period where you and her and sometimes me were training together, but she was also getting Jerry workouts. So I feel like our former coach, Terry, received a lot of Jerry insights and then was like, oh, interesting, and implemented a lot of that in our training in like the last year and a like year, really. So that was also, you kind of like got like a sneaky little like pre-transition, I feel like, before your full transition.
So one of our audience questions was, I would be very curious to hear whether the recent doping scandal was at all a consideration for your decision to join the Bowerman Track Club. If not, why? And if yes, what overcame that consideration?
I mean, like, of course it was a consideration. Like, I was thinking about Bowerman earlier in the year and seeing Shelby get caught or whatever was definitely like really alarming. But I really, really respect Mo, Ahmed, and Gabriella, probably the most like in the world. I think they are like, do things right. I think they work really hard. I think they like navigate the sport well. And so I just, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see a world in which either of them are doping. I just trust them like so fully. I also don't think that Gabriella would lure her little sister into like a drug circle. So perhaps I'm being like completely fooled, but those were things that I just believed and I like felt comfortable continuing to believe and joining the group. I also personally would never dope. It's just like, I want to have a life after running that would probably be destroyed if I ever was caught. My partner does exercise physiology research. His career would also probably be over. So if there's anything like nefarious happening in this group, I would just leave. Like, and that's like something that I feel like comfortable going into this. I also just obviously don't think the group is doping. Yes, they have a lot of resources. Yes, like they do really well, but just like, I haven't been here for very long, but I don't think that like Jerry or Shalane would be like capable of having some sort of like drug situation. So yeah, like obviously it was a consideration joining the group, but I just, yeah, just based on like the people that are here, I think they are good people and I don't think they're doing drugs. But obviously, like, I kind of think that's something that you need to think about when you join any group. Like, you don't know anything about anything until you're there.
And I mean, not to lead the witness too much here, but you are hard pressed to find a group that's been around as long as Bowerman has, with the success that Bowerman has had, without one incidence of cheating. Like, it is, you know, people act as individual agents and you can't, you know, you look around. Like, it's, unfortunately, we don't live in a perfect world. And I just, yeah, I think that it's, you're hard pressed to find a club that's been around for 10 plus years with a squeaky, squeaky clean everything.
Yeah, like it definitely like freaked me out, especially because this decision was already so hard. So that was just another thing that made it even harder. And I was really conflicted. But I talked to, you know, Gabriella and like Andrea said, Mo, and, you know, I trust my big sister and I trust myself too. And I trust the coaches. And I think as long as I feel that trust is there, and yeah, I believe 100% in clean sport. So as long as I'm in the situation where I, you know, I trust what I'm doing and the people around me, I think then I'm okay.
We have one more. We have a series of sort of rapid fire questions that we'll get to in a moment, but we had one more question that was a write-in from our audience. What do you think the main driving factor has been that's led to an amazing jump in the depth and impressive increase in the performances of Canada's women middle distance and long distance runners?
I kind of find this question difficult because it's not like we train together. So like, I don't really know what other people are doing and how they have improved, but I guess like I can answer it for myself, or maybe like the 5K. I think that like Gabriella running 14:44 sort of like opened the door to just running faster times and making like sub 15 not that big of a barrier. I think that like Jess and I were sort of caught at that like 15:00 for a long time. And then Gabriella just like blows it out of the water. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, oh wait, that's actually like so much better. So then that was in 2019 when then I like made a final and ran sub 15. So I think that it was sort of like Gabriella and then me making the final. And then like, hopefully that kind of like inspired like Julianne and Natalia to be kind of like, oh, sub 15, that's not a big deal. So I kind of think that's possibly what happened. And I'm kind of hoping that that's what will happen in the 10K. Just like seeing other women in Canada do the things that like you want to do. And I kind of think that's what's happening in the marathon with Melindy running 2:24. I think there just needs to be like somebody who does something so much better. And then it kind of makes it like more realistic.
Well, I mean, I would totally agree with that, Andrea. I mean, we had that conversation a lot over the last year, and the fact that we had five women in Canada run sub 15 in the 5K this year, myself being one of them. I mean, I think you're right. It took having Gabriella to kind of like set that really high threshold for the rest of us to be like, oh, well, you know, like you said, sub 15 is actually not that impressive on the world stage anymore, or even necessarily on the Canadian stage, because look at how much faster this person's run. And I think you're right. You did that in the 10K, because for a long time it was like just sort of running sub 32, which is still really great. But when you have someone running 31 teens, it kind of redefines where that like barrier is. And I think it like, we see this in lots of different examples in history, right? Like how long did it take to break the 4-minute mile barrier? And then the next year, like five people did it. So I think it's cool to see those inspirations. Lou, do you have any insights on that for yourself as a mid-distance runner?
Yeah, my first thought was honestly, I think Gabriella's trajectory really, I mean, if you even look at the timing, everyone, like Canadian women's distance running was very strong, but very rarely were full teams being sent to international championships, and so running under 15 was not very common, and nobody had run under 4 minutes. And then Gabriella made this move to Glasgow and like made this commitment to just get like as good as she could get, and then runs 14:44 and runs 3:56. And I think just that kind of gave a lot of other women confidence to say, well, I guess I can do that too. And then, yeah, two years later, all of a sudden we're sending a full Olympic team on the women's side. And people are now, you need to run under 15 to go there and to make the Olympics. So I think, yeah, I think she had a big part of it.
Maddie, do you want to take us through some of the rapid fires?
100%. All right, ladies. Coolest place you've gone for a run and dream place you want to go for a run.
I think the coolest place is St. Moritz. It's beautiful. The long run that like MTC does there is really cool. Coolest place I want to go for a run. The London Marathon course.
Good answer. Lou, what about you? Favorite place you've run and favorite or dream place you'd like to run?
My favorite place to run, maybe just because of I, you know, reminds me of home, but the Don Valley River, a dream place to run. I don't know. I think it'd be cool to run like at the top of some mountain somewhere, maybe in Hawaii or something. I love just running around the different, I don't know.
Lou, I was going to say Hawaii. I don't know why. I don't even want to go to Hawaii like that badly, but yeah, I think like when I was young, you just like saw the rainbow track on like the internet and you were like, oh, that's in Hawaii. Cool running is in Hawaii.
Andrea and I can attest to the fact that there is some cool running in Hawaii because we were both there for a week before Tokyo and we didn't run on the rainbow track and we didn't run up any mountains, but it is a beautiful place to run.
Yeah, you guys, your pre-Olympic vacation. Pardon me, training camp.
Did not feel like a vacation.
Maddie and I are sweating our butts off in Gifu.
Yeah, it's the hottest place in the world. Okay, next question. Any tips for dealing with pre-race nerves?
Oh, man. Lots of experience in this department. The biggest thing for me has been letting go. So just like, yeah, trusting your body can run and just saying, well, whatever happens, happens. And just going to do my best regardless. And not thinking about, I have to hit this split and this blah, blah, blah. That's helped me a lot.
I think having like a clear race plan makes it more like methodical. And I think like nerves can sometimes come from like the thought that a race is like chaotic. Just thinking like, well, yeah, just thinking about like whatever you want to do in the race. And then it kind of just like controls it a bit. That helps me. Also speaking to a sports psychologist.
Okay, so sort of along those lines and as a bit of a follow-up, do you find it hard to move on after a bad race? And if so, how do you deal with this feeling?
I do, yes, find it hard to move on just because like we put so much into the sport and like some opportunities just like don't come up all that often. But just trying to like think, maybe just like look ahead at the next race or just try to like come up with something positive from the race, like in the race that you did well, or just trying to like learn from it, I think is good. And not just like being totally negative about something, helps. But yeah, I do think it is still just like hard to move on from disappointment because yeah, it is just like you put so much into it. So just be kind to yourself as well.
I think for me, it's really helpful to just do something else. Like maybe, you know, reflect on the race, find something positive, and then go have dinner with my family or go for a walk or look forward to the next run or, you know, see a movie and just try to move on. Because the longer you dwell on it, you can only, you know, get so much from dwelling on it. So I think it's important to just, yeah, let go and move on.
Both of you are born and raised Ontarians. What is your favorite awesome memory?
My high school team actually won OFSA cross country, which I think is really cool because I went to a high school of about 500 people. It was like brand new in Guelph, Ontario, and like to gather like four girls who are good at running in Guelph, I think it's just like really cool. And it was in Thunder Bay and it was this really difficult, crazy course and it was freezing. And we drove in a bus there, like everyone who was part of our district or something. So it was just like this really epic journey to Thunder Bay. And I don't know, just like winning as a team, I think is, I don't know, like that was just really special.
My favorite awesome memory is probably in grade 12, Jazz, Martha, and I all medaled in the 1500. And it was pretty cool because even though we're from different schools, those were my training partners and we spent so many hours together running and then all were on the podium together. And it was kind of a little bit of a snippet to what, you know, university running would be like and being part of the U of T track team and having many moments like that with Maddie.
Andrea, we had an audience member write in asking when we can be expecting the release of your first book. I think there is some desire to hear your story in written form. Do you have any plans to write a book anytime soon?
Oh, very interesting. I'm glad to hear that there is interest.
As Andrea said that, she pushed her glasses up on the bridge of her nose like a real author would.
Excuse me. Well, let me just start writing here. Perhaps a thought. I actually always thought that my first book would be a cookbook. But now that I know that there's interest in my story, I'll do both.
We will wait with bated breath for the release of your cookbook and your memoir. Maybe it can be, you know, both rolled into one. I would absolutely buy that. So keep us posted.
One final question. Do you think we will continue to see a Canadian invasion of the Bowerman Track Club? Actually, and then, not that like this is based in anything, but then also name, and it can't be Caterie, your dream Canadian training partner. Like, if like your ideal person from Team Canada to come to Bowerman can't be Caterie, because we would obviously be your first choices.
Like, my dream person was kind of already there. It was my sister. So I feel like I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, obviously, like Gabriella, that was like a major reason why I joined. But we need more. This is a call to any marathon runners. So probably my dream person would be like Melindy. Like, not that she's ever going to move to Portland. But yeah, just another marathon runner, or someone who's like interested in running the marathon, Natasha.
Marathon ladies of the Great White North. Andrea wants you. Andrea's recruiting you. So I guess all that's really left to talk about is what's coming next for you both. I know you said you have some upcoming altitude camps. I'm curious what that's going to look like. When are you traveling? Where are you going? And then maybe as a follow-up, do you have any races on the sort of immediate horizon?
Yeah, we are going to Flagstaff in January, I think, for like almost 2 months. Then after that, I actually don't have like much of a race plan at the moment. Possibly indoor races, possibly a 10K outdoors, obviously. But I like obviously won't be doing world indoors. So I think that's kind of like what people are working towards. That is not for me. So I would like to run an outdoor 10K. So possibly that.
Well, my first plan is I'm coming home on the 14th. Woo! and then I think I'll start running indoors at the end of January. I don't know what races yet, but I'm planning on hopefully running world indoors. So I've never been to altitude, so I don't know what that's going to be like, but I'm excited to see.
Okay, guys, our final question to wrap up today's episode is, what's your number one goal for this year? And then what is like your ultimate, to use a Nike quote, moonshot goal for your running career?
For this year, I would just like to place better at the World Championships in the 10,000. Don't know if I'm going to run the 5K. And then the marathon debut, I don't know. I just think like running like a decent time and like not hating it would be the goal. And then the moonshot goal. Yeah. I would like to run the marathon at the 2024 Olympics, and yeah, like top eight would be a dream. And also running like in the low 220s, 222, that'd be like really, I think, really good. And also just, yeah, running like a faster half marathon as well. So yeah, just more goals on the roads. Yeah, I have lots of goals. Also doing well in like some major marathons as well.
Yeah. Andrea, you forgot, write my memoir.
Oh yeah. And start my memoir. Yeah. Thank you. Which I will do today.
I would like to hopefully just improve this year. I know like sometimes a transition year can be a bit hard, but I think, you know, improve my 1500 and 800 times would be awesome. Going under 4 minutes in 2 minutes would definitely be really nice too. So Santa, if you want to give me that for Christmas. And then a moonshot goal would probably be, you know, being on an international podium at some point. But I'm really just excited to see where my legs take me, you know, I'm really just curious more than anything.
I think that's a perfect way to end it. These two are curious and excited as to where their legs will take them. You can find Andrea's book on bookshelves, maybe fall 2024, you know, maybe.
I've heard that, you know, there's when you're training for the Olympics, there's like not much else to do. So why not write a cookbook / memoir leading into the 2024 Paris Games?
Well, they give you a pretty sick advance too. So, you know, if you're looking to fund that Olympic dream, submit the proposal ahead of the games.
Lucia and Andrea, thank you so much for joining us on the Rundown this week. It was lovely to see your beautiful faces on our Zoom screen. I know our audience can't see them, but hopefully our audience has enjoyed listening to your insightful and wonderful voices. We wish you the best of luck. Andrea, I'm so happy for you that you're able to go back to Australia and see Jamie. Safe travels with that, and I hope everything goes smoothly. And Lou, I know that Maddie is dying to be able to see you in person shortly as well. So safe travels to you both, and happy, happy holidays and happy running.
Thanks so much for having
Thank
us.
You.
I wish we could do the podcast where we ask you questions, because I want to know what's going on in your lives now.
At some point, we'll turn the microphone around. But until then, yeah. It's been awesome chatting with you both. Thank you so much. Well, Maddie, it was awesome being able to chat with our former training partners about their new adventures in Portland. But we have a lot of other Canadian results and excitement from the last week to get to. And this is the first time that we've had back-to-back rundowns in a couple months, I think. And it's actually very warranted because a lot happened over the last week, starting with the roads and the California International Marathon. So Rory Linkletter and Brittany Moran both ran personal best times. Rory was second overall in a little tiny baby PB of 2:12:52. That is a 2-second personal best. And Brittany Moran, I am so impressed by this woman. She ran an almost 3-minute PB, crushing it in 2:33:37 for 9th place overall. And Brittany just ran Boston, like, what was that? Less than 2 months ago. So this is a fantastic turnaround for her. Really, really cool to see. And she's not a Canadian, but I do have to give a shout out to the winner of the CIM, who is American Sarah Vaughn. So Sarah debuted in this victory running 2:26:53. Now, CIM is a fast course. It is a net downhill. It doesn't qualify for anything like world records or national records. So everyone knows it is a fast course. But still, to debut in 2:26:53 is super impressive, especially when you consider that Sarah has historically been a mid-distance track runner. She's 35 years old. She has focused primarily on the 1500 meter and the steeplechase over the last several years. She actually ran a 4:05 1500 meter in July this year. So she was focused on the track all summer. I didn't even know that she was training for a marathon and to come out and do this debut. And I should also mention she's a mother of four. So she's got some stuff going on in her life. She's a real estate agent as well. Just really, really cool to see these kind of results from anyone, but especially from a woman with this awesome of a story.
Even like take the kids and career away, the range to run a 4:05 into 2:26, like that is, there are very few people in the world who could do that. Very, very few. Like that is truly remarkable range. That means that this woman has the speed in her legs to probably run a 27-200. And like, as you know, someone like our guest Andrea would tell you, as a distance specialist, the ability to run that fast over like 100 or 200, like it would be extremely difficult for even someone of Andrea's level to run a 4:05 1500. I think I'm fair in saying that. And this woman is doing that and then a 2:26 marathon 4 months apart, maybe. Like, and then you know our backstory and it's even more impressive. But just like take the backstory away and just look at those times, and that is truly a remarkable feat.
And you can, to your point, Maddie, about her leg speed, there's a video of her crossing the line and like, you know, the last 50 meters of her race in this marathon and then crossing the line. and she is sprinting. Like, she looks fresh and fast, and you can tell that she's got mid-distance background. I think she can go a lot faster. She looked amazing when she crossed the line, was kind of jumping around, really excited, didn't even look tired. So kudos to Sarah and also to Rory and Brittany on their incredible performances in Sacramento.
Moving on to Valencia, there was another marathon across the pond this weekend. We had two Canadians competing, Ben Prisner and Justin Kent. Ben Prisner went in with the goal of breaking Cam Levin's Canadian record. He did not come away with a national record. Unfortunately, he ran 2:15. His personal best is 2:11, but you know what? Not every day is a PB day. I do believe that Ben is someone who could have, you know, Cam Levin's record one day, when the time is right. Justin Kent ran a 2:17:38, just missing his PB. Also not what he was looking for, but again, you don't get to knock it out of the park every time you show up for a marathon. So I'm sure they'll come back and they'll have a Sarah Vaughn day or a Brittany Moran day in the coming year.
Yeah, and I know that Ben actually was originally on the start list for the New York City Marathon, but said that it was just too quick of a turnaround after the Olympics. You'll remember that he was our top Canadian finisher at the Tokyo, Sapporo Marathon this summer. So again, it's so tough to run a high level, all out, you know, top caliber marathon and a few months later turn around and try to replicate it or, you know, run faster. So kudos to both Justin and Ben. And as you said, I'm sure we'll see much faster times from them in the future.
So track is back, ladies and gentlemen. We had some very strong Canadian performances at the Sharon Collier Danville season opener in Boston. Now, if you are new to the pod, the Boston University track is one of the most special tracks on planet Earth. I don't know what they did to that facility. It bounces like a trampoline. It is, but like not too much. Like it bounces just the amount you would want to feel like your very best self.
It's the Goldilocks of bouncy tracks.
I have run, you know, arguably one of the best races of my life there. It is, you know, the home of world indoor records, American indoor records. It has become the place to be. And if you just wanted to like spend every weekend in Boston, you could just sit at this facility and watch really great track literally every weekend. It is where people go now in North America to run indoor races. But for the Canadians this weekend, Kaylee McCabe continued her incredible year by winning the 3000 meter and setting a new Canadian U23 record of 8:52. The previous record was 8:56, held by Sheila Reid. Ihab El Sandali opened his indoor season with a 13:28 5000 meter. That puts him fifth on the Canadian indoor all-time list. He was 12th in the race. The top 12 all broke 13:30. And I believe first place went to Ollie Hoare in 13:08.
Yeah, huge performance. And I think it was like an almost 30-second Australian indoor record.
And also, like, that guy had a heck of a 2021. It is still 2021, but, you know, sort of in track minds, as soon as you start running track, even if it's December, it's 2022. But yeah, he's coming off an incredible summer, and to be able to carry that momentum into the indoor season is remarkable, because most people post-Olympics who had a season like him are nursing a thing or two. So this is very, very exciting for him and his group at the On Athletics Club. And our final piece of Canadian news, Gracelyn Larkin ran a 15:41 in the 5,000 meter for 11th place. So congratulations to our Canadians in Boston.
Super impressive results across the board. And again, these athletes are fairly young, so lots of up-and-coming talent, and exciting to see what they will have on the horizon as we continue through this indoor season, which is, I mean, it's December 6th, and they're running these times indoors. I mean, indoors sometimes doesn't even start in earnest for another month. So super exciting to see. Our last piece of track news is that both Andre DeGrasse and Damian Warner are finalists for the Lou Marsh Trophy. So most people will be familiar with this. It's one of the most prestigious athletic awards in our country. It's named after Toronto Star sports journalist Lou Marsh. And many track athletes have been awarded the trophy since its inauguration all the way back in 1936. These include sprinter Phil Edwards, distance runner Gerard Cote, Bruce Kidd, Bill Cruthers, Ben Johnson, and Terry Fox. Really prestigious company there. And the last time that a track and field athlete won the award was when 1996 Olympic 100-meter gold medalist Donovan Bailey won. So, you know, it's time to see a track and field athlete back up on this list, I think. However, both are up against some incredible athletes this year, including swimmers Penny Oleksiak and Maggie McNeil, soccer goalie Stephanie LeBay, and hockey player Connor McDavid. So stay tuned as we keep you updated with all of the developments in the Lou Marsh Award. And although being named Canada's top athlete is, of course, a huge prestigious honor, there is some debate right now in the world of Canadian sports as to whether the trophy needs to be renamed, because Lou Marsh himself has a history as a journalist dating back to the 1930s as using a lot of racist language, racist tropes in the way that he described athletes. And there's some debate about whether, you know, athletes of color being given this award would be better served were it to be renamed for someone less controversial. So again, we'll keep you posted on how this story develops as well. But overall, kudos to two of our top athletes in the sport, Andre and Damien, for being considered one of the best athletes of the country this year. And listeners, just before we let you go, there are two pieces of news that broke after our time of recording. The first is that former Olympic marathoner Reed Coolset has announced his plans to race the Western States Endurance Run in June of 2022. The second piece of exciting news is that Olympic medalist in the race walk, Evan Dunphy, has announced his plans to run for city council in next October's municipal elections in his hometown of Richmond, British Columbia. Thanks so much for tuning in to this edition of The Rundown. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Shakeout Podcast. And as always, check out runningmagazine.ca for lots more exciting news. We'll be right back.